need to stick to being a broker and quarterbacking the best players together versus trying to figure out every single thing about every solution myself, because it's impossible. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Heads Up Advisor podcast. In another episode here, we're with my good friend, Dutch Rojas. Dutch, welcome to the show, man.
John, I'm so excited to be here.
Well, stop. Well, you're now a Southern Cowboy as well.
That's right. We just got a place just outside of San Clemente. Yeah, super happy. We signed, and we're ready to roll.
Just came out here a couple of times and said, this is the life.
Dude, this place is killer. And I was telling you earlier, like, so I'm here with my wife and my little kid. And then I'm sitting at a breakfast place in Dana Point, and then here comes Craig Lack out of nowhere. And my wife has heard me talking about Craig. She's like, oh, is that the guy you really like? I'm like, yeah, but don't say that in front of him, okay? Like, don't.
I was a little embarrassed. She said, are you the Twisted Steel and Sex Appeal guy?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, that's what she said.
So now you're in SoCal. You done with Arizona?
No, I love Arizona. I love the desert. I'll be there all winter. I love New York City, but I just, like, I can't do it anymore, man. I can't do it anymore. Yeah. You ever miss Jersey?
Yeah, I go back and forth, you know. I'm still every month, so it's you know, I've been spending a little bit more time here, but that's okay.
You ever told the audience about that fantastic cigar shop I took you to?
Yeah, that was fun, you know. Yeah. It was like, you own the place.
Dude, no, there are some...
He's the only guy that I've ever met that orders takeout steaks from a legit steakhouse. It was Root Steakhouse.
Well, that's because Bob goes to the...
He goes, we're just going to pick up steaks. I go, we're going to go sit in? No, we're going to pick them up to go. I was like, who does that at a steakhouse?
Well, the guy that goes to the cigar shop with us, Bob Moore, big Citigroup guy, he owns the steakhouse. And he smokes cigars. Yeah. So that's why I do it. Just because I'm a fan of the cigar shop. And all right, we got other stuff later to talk about.
So you know, I want to start out by just talking about the misconception of direct contracts versus bundled procedures, bundle surgeries. Obviously, that's your forte. You've created, if you want just to open up a little bit about kind of bundle surgeries and things that you guys do, but what are the differences and where are we getting them wrong from the brokerage industry, from the employer industry, TPA industry? Where's the
well, look, direct contracts really, you know, is the method we use to avoid dealing with any other intermediaries. And so what you want in a self-funded plan is you want for the employer to have agreements with the physicians and the facilities that are aligned with their plan incentives. Obviously, it makes sense. Now, if you want to use a currency, we use, at Sana, we use bundles. Dr. Keith Smith uses bundles. But there are other people that use a percentage of Medicare. There are other people that use straight fee for service, like they have a contracted dollar amount, right? So, like, you can use whatever you want. You can use crypto. You can use, you know, you can use Chinese currency if you want. But it's a matter of what you want to do. So there's a misconception that bundles and direct contracting are the same, and they are not. They're two totally different things. One is just a byproduct of the other.
What would you say they have in common, though? Because it sounds to me like...
Totally. What they have in common is they're aligned with what the employer wants, right? Like, so the whole goal here is let's reduce expenses and let's make medical treatments more affordable and more accessible for people. And the way to do that is to help them know what the price is up front, i.e. a bundle or a flat fee price, and then let's get rid of the carrier by doing a direct contract. And so this is, this is, obviously you guys know this better than I do. This is what's happening in the industry, and this is where it's going, and this is the way it's going to be.
But why has it been so difficult for people to get them in certain regions and areas? Is it just there's not enough business for guys like you to go after it there? Is it certain industries are harder to negotiate, or certain states are harder to negotiate the other because of the percentage of Medicare?
Yeah, I also think it's like, where is adoption readily available? And so the reason we've been successful on the West Coast is because everybody in the Silicon Valley says they're innovative. Now, they don't tend to be, but now all of them are becoming that way, right? So we're having conversations with the largest tech companies in the world, and they're finally grabbing on to what we've been talking about since 2005. And now all of a sudden they're doing it. And because they're doing it, then what will happen is manufacturing will do it, and banking will do it, and finance will do it, and everybody else. So I don't know if it's harder. I think it's just like, what's your business model? And if your business model is innovation, then you're going to try to be innovative.
I hear what I talk about a lot is social proof. right?
Yeah,
America
totally.
Is a country that needs social proof. I talk about, I had a seminar and I said, raise a hand if everybody would love to buy their healthcare procedures on Amazon and shop, you know, rating and the prices and be able to go. Everybody's hands went up, right?
Yeah.
I said, that exists today.
Right.
The reality is nobody does it because the big guys haven't done it yet. So you need social proof to say Apple does it.
Yep.
Amazon does it. Well, it's okay now. I can do it. So
now I can do it.
It's exactly what you're saying is once these bigger tech companies do it and cross that bridge and we can say, hey, these players are doing it, then we can bring it to the smaller market, I believe.
Yeah, then I don't think, you know, no matter who you are, like no matter if you have a 50-life self-funded group or a 5,000 or a 50,000-life self-funded group, you're not going to do anything that jeopardizes your relationship with a client, i.e. you can't feed your wife and kids or your husband and kids or whatever your partner is. But the point is, like, you're not going to do anything to jeopardize that. And I think, you know, part of the reason I think you and I have become friends is because we're both innovative and risk takers. And there's a part of the world that's just not willing to take risk. And we were willing to take risk with the right employers who said, we'll partner with you. We're in this deal with you. And then let's just see it through to the end and let's figure it out together. There are 90% of employers aren't like that. Oh. We just happen to find the first 10% that were.
And I think that's a strong point, because if you can't get the buy-in from the top,
that's everything.
And the owner to ride with you. I was talking about it on a Facebook Live the other day of challenges with HR and not liking this, but if you don't have the owner riding with you,
it's not going to work.
They're not going to take that leap.
No, and by the way, you might as well save your time, right? Like I'm sure Craig would agree. Like, why would you even do business with people that aren't going to make sure that you're successful or do everything they can? A lot of people want their business to be turned around. They want more money. They want to achieve more sales. They want to do all this, but they're not willing to put in the work. So if you're not willing to put up the work, then why would you partner with people that aren't willing to do that?
Yeah, it's as old as time,
right?
Everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die.
That's right.
And so my anecdotal 35 years in this business would say that it's 1% of employers who are interested in being innovative. It's 99% who are, they can't overcome the irresistible force of gravity. And so they don't do anything. They make little incremental changes, right? And they call that innovation. And so eventually, we all know this is going to happen. Eventually their pressure within their market vertical becomes so intense, or their inability to keep their margins from shrinking ever lower because their supply chain keeps jacking up their prices. Whatever it is that's causing pressure on the bottom line will inevitably result in it becoming absolutely necessary that we try to control healthcare costs.
No, it is really insane. I mean, I know you guys talk about it a lot, but it's just wonderful for me to see, like, large Fortune 500 companies, the CHRO and the CFO will sit there and tell us, like, no, we're going to go with Cigna. This is really our best option, right? They're our friend. They'll say things like, in the last 6 months, I've heard from a big Taft-Hartley group, I heard Cigna is our partner and has been with us for 25 years and they care about us, Dutch. And to that, I gave the big thumbs down and went, you have absolutely no idea what you're talking about. Of course they like you. And if you were paying me 5 to 7 times the amount of money that I was supposed to get, I said, you'd be my best friend too. You want me to fly you in a helicopter? You want me to buy you a Ferrari? Sure. Sure, give me $400 million. That's $15,000 per employee per year, right? On a huge friggin' Taft-Hartley group. Like, these guys had 33,000 members. And they're paying $15,000 per employee per year.
Oh, they love them. They're their best friend.
Yeah, best friend.
I want to go back to real quick is because, you know, I have the conversation with Tom Emmerich about Walmart.
Dude, he's so smart.
Yeah.
Good God.
One of my good friends, one of my mentors, I think just huge in this industry of a roadmap. But what he would say is you talk per employee per year profit. And he said, well, Microsoft or these bigger companies, they got $350,000 per employee per year profit.
Yep.
And Walmart was six. So we had a change. What's interesting that I hear is that, so these tech companies, their per employee per year profit is still pretty damn good, I would say.
Oh, look, Google's is over $500,000 per employee. I think Facebook's like $400, $420.
So what I hear you saying, though, is they want to do it because they want to be innovative more than this component.
Do they call themselves, like, when you hear it from them and their HR departments, they call themselves healthcare activists. Like, that's the title that no one gave that to them. They, like, I'm in a meeting and they're like, Dutch, we're healthcare activists. I'm like, well, I've never heard of you. Like, I've never seen you in a meeting. I've never seen you do a presentation on healthcare. Tell me about that. And they're like, yeah, yeah, okay, whatever. We're healthcare activists. And they want to do it. Not be, here's the funny part. When you look at the P&L, healthcare expenses for the top 10 tech companies are a days of, is one day revenue. one day revenue, right? Like, not profit, obviously, but revenue. So really, they probably don't give a rat's rear end. But the point is, like, they want to do it because they want to show the world that it can be done.
So just those listening, from a sales perspective, we always talk about is finding the pain point, what the personality wants. And tech companies don't give a damn about saving money in healthcare. I told you about the group in Silicon Valley. It was like, well, John, I think you don't understand. We're not looking to save money on healthcare here.
Right.
We just want to fund these other programs to keep our employees at the office and never leave so we can have them make sure they make our products.
It makes total sense.
And we have to compete against everyone else in the Silicon Valley who's giving away the most outrageous benefits.
Yes. So, the most amazing thing I've seen over the last couple of years is, like, the Silicon Valley gives out the best benefits. And the thing is, when you get the best benefits, if done appropriately, as we talk about here on this podcast, when you do them right, it actually does reduce overall expenses by a large number. Like, when someone goes from 15, 16 to 10, that's a large number. So what can you do with all that capital? Well, you know, Craig will tell you exactly what you can do with all that capital, because it's a lot.
I think one of the challenges that they're going to run into with doing that, and I see it when you look at, we talked about it in a recent meeting, was fertility treatment, things like that. It's like, they want to offer these benefits that they're not going to lower healthcare costs, because, again, they don't care about that. They're just looking to recruit and retain talent. You put a program in place for infertility treatment and covering it, 7 out of 10 babies are going to come out premature that go through those programs. So, you know, I think some employers have to realize when they look at it and understand, just because Apple is doing it doesn't mean it's right for you. That doesn't mean it's going to lower healthcare costs. We had to break the news to recent employers, like, no, you don't want to do that. Your objective is different from theirs. You're not in the world of a $400,000.
I believe her quote was, oh my God, now that you mention it, the last 2 years, our number of shock losses for preemie babies has skyrocketed.
Well, people ask us about bundles for babies for maternity all the time. If you're the right employer, a bundle for maternity is really a good idea. If you're the wrong employer, it's not a good idea.
Explain to me why. Like,
well, look, if all of a sudden I say, well, John, there's no copay, no deductible, and you can just have all the babies you want, and guess what? You're going to have it at the nicest facility that we have here in Orange County. Well, then guess how many babies are going to be born? Significantly more than were going to be born if you had a copay and a deductible. There are other companies where the opposite is true, where, like, their cost of losing an employee is so high that the cost of those excess babies will never matter to them. And so they want the bundle because they want to know what the price is. They're not trying to cut the price necessarily. I mean, they probably are, but you see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
the incentives are totally different. And so it works that way.
Hey, John, it brings up a point that you and I have talked about numerous times, right? It's the fact that a lot of people, you just made a great point, Dutch. A lot of people think that all you have to do is read off a list of ingredients. And as long as you just check the box and go, yeah, we got that, you're right, that suddenly you're going to somehow cook a 5-star meal, even though you're not a 5-star chef. And so talk to us about the idea that anybody can just go out and get a bundle. Anybody can just go out and negotiate a direct contract, because there seems to be a mythology around the fact that this is a solution that is so simple that you can check the box.
Really what it's about is expertise, right? Like,
experience and history.
Do you understand, like, how healthcare works from the medical treatment side? Do you know the basics of, like, operating these facilities? Do you understand what the pain points are for administrators? Do you understand, like, the legal concepts that we're talking about, what all these legal concepts are based on? Like, do you understand those things? And then do you understand, like, what the price ought to be? If you've never priced implants, like, how do you know what the price is going to be? Like, how do you know you got a good bundle? Well, some guys are like, well, we compare him to Keith Smith. And I'm like, that guy's a genius at bundles. It'd be really hard to mimic him. You're probably not going to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just too far ahead. So I think what happens is that people think they can do things themselves, and then they finally come back.
Listen,
and say,
I'm one of them. I'm a broker. I was a know-it-all. I mean, the premise of the Achieve Health Plan is really to provide the broker with solutions that work, right? And I need to find the right partners that know what they're doing to handle those pieces. And I need to stick to being a broker and quarterbacking the best players together versus trying to figure out every single thing about every solution myself, because it's impossible.
Well,
how am I going to sell?
Look, we had to do the same thing with when we started in orthopedics and spine, right? And then when we got to other things that I didn't know anything about, like we got into cardiology. We were just here last week in Orange County for the MedAxiom conference, right? Where I got to speak to 400 or 500 cardiologists. Well, look, 6 months ago, I didn't know anything about cardiology. I had to like figure it out. And then I had to find people who knew a ton about cardiology so we can start building a bundled network based on cardiology. Well, like I didn't go do that myself because I can't. I don't have the expertise. I don't have the understanding. So I had to find experts that did it. And I couldn't just say to them, well, I'll pay you $1 an hour and then you're just going to help me, right? Because they know what their value is. They're like, oh, you're going to sell this to large companies and then they're going to pay you a little bit and everybody's going to save. And that's how it works.
So let's jump back to, we're talking about patient utilization and steerage, because the whole goal and premise on these plans is getting members to utilize these bundled surgeries, direct contracts, whatever you have to these fair cost, high quality facilities. And you know, the challenge is always getting the employee to do what you want them to do. What have you seen work? What have you learned over the time of getting?
Well, optimized? You know, now we're talking about the biggest thing that I ever faced, right? I thought when I solved the problem of having a contract with a bundled provider, I actually thought that I solved all of healthcare. And little did I know that I didn't solve anything. I probably created more problems. And I certainly didn't have a mechanism for health plans to utilize us. And so if you think about redirection, or called steerage through pre-authorization, that has about at the high end, has about a 30% drive, right? 30% is not big enough. So we dealt for years with that. And look, we sent out emails, we sent out webinars. We did like everything you could possibly do. I think on the marketing end, there's people that are much better than me at marketing. So maybe they could do a better job. But basically we got to 30, 35% and that was about all, right? So what we hear constantly from employees is like, hey, I didn't know that I had this benefit 6 months later. I just had an ACL and I had to go to the hospital and then I had to pay all this money and, you know, I can't afford it and blah, blah, blah. It kind of broke my heart. So we tried med management. That's probably our middle ground today. And it's worked well because we're at 60, 65% utilization. In other words, somebody calls in directly to the nurse management or care team. And the care team says, they log into our portal and they go, this is where you need to go for your MRI, right? Like that works. The best compliance we have is over 90%. And that's with on-site clinics, near-site clinics, and virtual primary care. So virtual primary care.
Yeah, let's talk about first primary care because on-site, near-site is just not feasible for most groups, most of our audience, but.
No, it's not feasible for most of the United States, right? Like that's not going
to
work.
So talk to me.
But virtual primary care, you know, it's like my favorite thing of all time. I think when I connected with Jay Parkinson 5 or 7 years ago, something like that. Like I love the guy so much. He was at my wedding, right, in New York. So virtual primary care is really just an app and a way to go, let's call it digital first, right? And so you have an ache or pain, you have an issue, a member of your family has an issue. You basically open your app and you free text in, my knee hurts. Then what happens? Well, a primary care doctor that's dedicated to you, it's an integrated practice, it's dedicated to you, responds and says, hey, let's get you an x-ray or let's get you an MRI. Here's what else is going on. They ask you 7 or 8 questions. And they'll work to solve the problem. And so what happens in that scenario is right away they access our network. And so do you want to pay $3,000 at a local hospital for an MRI, or do you want to pay $186.90 right here on Crown Parkway? Like, what is it you want to do? And so that's the way we found, like, we could immediately steer
you get
patients.
Them even earlier than medical management, which is interesting. I mean, everybody knows that I'm not the biggest fan of DPC and some of their methods, but what we have actually with our partners on the Achieve Health Plan as option is a virtual primary care.
Yeah, you do have virtual primary care.
Which I believe in. Yeah. For certain people in certain groups, and obviously the cost of it is a lot different, but if you can catch them early, because again, the challenge is You got to get them early. To have a success rate of 90%,
compliance, right?
So we've done it strictly through, my success has been through plan design, which basically says, bring your checkbook. You can go where you want. Bring your checkbook. If not, if you want it for free, here's the cost.
Yep.
You have to call your advocacy service.
Yep.
But that's an interesting point to even increase the compliance rate from that aspect. But
look. Here's where I figured it out from. It's not a large epiphany. If you ask 100 people, right, where did you go for a specialty consult when your doctor, did you go where your doctor asked you to go? And out of those 100 people, most of them will go, well, I just went to where my doctor said to go. I mean, unless they have a brother or a cousin or a brother-in-law or somebody like that who's like world famous, and they go, you know, I went to my brother-in-law's case because he's the best in Jersey, you know, like then you didn't see it. So that's the way it came. Look, physician leadership is going to be the way this deal runs. And I think DPC has its problems because it's fragmented, right? It's difficult for employer plans. I mean, I'm sure that's a conversation for another podcast because I love DPC, but it has its pros and cons.
Sure.
So does virtual primary care, right? It's virtual. But look, we can deal with 3,500 different diagnoses. Like, so
it's like you just said,
it's
though,
not that bad.
You text your doctor. I don't know. I say this in the seminars. I don't want to talk to anybody anymore on the phone. If I can text, I'm going to text you. I don't need to talk to you.
And like you said, it depends on the group, right? So by 2025, 76% of the workforce will be millennials.
They don't want to talk to anybody.
Our second screen is their first screen.
That's right.
So they live on the phone. They don't want to talk to somebody. And so you'll fit well. But now you pick some old timer, maybe a union plan full of seniors and boomers.
They
won't adopt that technology.
No,
everything requires a fit.
Yes. Yeah, everything does. Yeah,
each different client is different. So what about if I'm an independent TPA and I'm using a BUCA network versus a regional? My understanding and what I've heard in the past is the BUCAs don't want you to steer in their contracts. It specifically says you can't steer to specific facilities and doctors. And what happens if my patient goes to a Cigna doctor, I like to call them the Green Tree, insurance company doctor, and the doctor wants the $30,000 because they're contracted with the Green Tree company versus your $12,000 bundle.
That's not how it works.
Tell me how it works.
So a physician or a physician group signs a contract with us. They agree to be paid by us in our currency. So they come back to us and they...
Agreement is with the physician side. So our protection is that they're not going to balance bill or they're not going to come after the employer group or the member for that PPO rate.
That's right.
Okay.
So
does that... A lot of what we see is hospital systems. Are you doing this with a hospital system or is it just independent?
Some hospital systems. Look, I think the number one way to reduce expenses, and I don't get paid when we just reduce expenses, right? I just get paid on x-rays and MRIs and lab tests. Mm. But obviously my goal is to reduce expenses. Look, I don't even know why people go to the hospital. If you are a healthy person and you need an outpatient procedure, i.e. you need a pain injection, you need a knee replacement, you need something done on your shoulder, you need something even done on your heart, right? Like if it's clinically appropriate, you need to remind the doctor, like put me in an outpatient setting.
But here's a challenge they run into, right? So I'll push back from the broker's side, is they own everything. They own the physician, they own the primary, they own the specialist, they own the outpatient, the hospital system. So I go to my primary, sends me a specialist in XYZ hospital system, and then I say, go to this outpatient facility that we own because we can't send you anywhere else. We're legally obligated to send you there.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, but it depends on how your plan's set up, but with our plans, right, everybody has a mobile app.
But we can't have, with those hospital systems is what I'm asking. I guess I'm asking is your bundles aren't with them, correct?
No, bundles aren't, but we have direct contracts with large hospital systems.
Okay, so when we look at it from a bundle standpoint, if we have members, we can communicate in an open enrollment meeting, say we have bundles available.
Yep.
Do we go as far as having a list in the area, or do we do it?
Absolutely.
We can, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Once an employer has signed our documents and we're on, we tell everybody. I mean, they have an app.
I've talked to in the past are like, no, we can't give you the list.
Oh, no. It's not even a list, right? It's an app that shows you exactly what's available in your local area. And if you go, my employer lets me travel to Oklahoma City, it'll show you what's available in Oklahoma City. Or my doctor lets me travel to, this is a really good surgery center in Monterey. Like, you can go to Monterey and get a knee replaced for $19,000 from, like, doctors that do them every 30 minutes. So, really, every 30 minutes, 27 minutes is their average time. So, like, yeah, that's all available on the app. Like, you don't need anything else.
So, the other success is, so, the app is new, right? The app is coming. Talking about that a little
bit. Oh, okay. Well, so, I talked to you a little bit earlier today about the consumer app. It's different. But we have an app that goes along with our platform.
Okay.
The Sano web portal and the Sano platform is where all medical management, all TPA employees, that's where all the work that we've done on the enterprise side, the private employer side, that's where everybody gets their information. And so that's one piece of the pie. And then we have a, yeah, we have a consumer app that's coming out.
Hey, Dust, can you address on the bundled prices specifically, can you compare and contrast the normal mess that is the surprise balance bills from the reapers? Even though you've gone to the PPO providers and done everything you're supposed to do, you still get a surprise bill in every PPO. Compare and contrast that against your bundled contracting for the same kind of procedure.
So one, we obviously don't allow balance billing, right? So the trade that we make with the physicians and with the facilities is that you are going to get paid 100% of the claim within 21 days. And so let's make that trade, or you can get paid by the PPO networks. And God knows, I mean, I've been on that side of the business for a long time. It's generally 60 to 90 days, and then you're losing 9 to 12% of gross margin, right, at the end of the year. Like, it's uncollectible. You're not going to get it. So you're going from a model where you got to collect from the
and
patient.
And they have to collect from the patient.
Yeah, and I'm saying, like, don't collect from the patient.
And is,
like,
is your value prop true to them, that there's no patient responsibility on your agreement?
Okay. That's absolutely true. And so, like, it's interesting because when there are plans that want to have patient responsibility, I cannot do business with them. Because my promise to the doctor is that you are going to get 100% of the money from the employer.
Got it.
Well, there has to be a baked-in incentive. If the employer says, well, you can go to the cheap discount guy, because that's what they used to call me, or you can go to the real insurance, Blue Cross Blue Shield, then, right, there's no incentive for them to go to the cheap discount guy.
Yeah, we talked about that earlier. Yeah. The only way I do it is through plan design, which is incentive-based.
Yeah, you have to do it.
The emails and all that other stuff.
So what kind of incentives do you have? Because I like
plan design.
Okay.
If you can go inside the regional network, wherever you want, the deductibles, and I raise it. I don't leave it as two. I make it scary so they really steer.
Yeah.
I might not do it year one, right? Year two, it goes to $5,000 for a single. $8,300 now, the max out of pocket we can go to this year?
$8,150 next year.
Yeah, that's good.
So, guys, you can go anywhere you want in your network. Your doctor says, go ahead, great. Bring your checkbook.
Yeah.
If you want to make a smart healthcare decision, just like you do in every other aspect of your life, you contact your advocacy and use that recommended facility with the high-quality doctor, it's free.
Yeah, it's free.
Does anybody not want free here?
No, it's so much easier.
Maybe you don't like that doctor. We can go find another one. But it's your choice.
Well, look, and you can go anywhere in the country. Like, that's the greatest thing on the planet.
Yeah, and I have massive success for the employers that do that. I mean, I had a situation last year, one guy didn't do it, but you can't convince everybody.
No, I mean, look, I don't even.
But he's going to have a big check to write.
Yeah, I mean, like,
I explain to the employers and the employees in the room is I can't control your costs.
You do.
People don't follow this process, guys. I can't. If you want me to continue to come in and give zero increases and lower your copays every year, because that's what we do, is we give it back in a form of lower doctor copayments. Well, everybody's got to participate because we're all in this together.
That's right. Yeah.
That's what we've done from a steerage incentive based standpoint, which is exactly what you're doing.
I love it. We've got to help people, man. We got to help them.
All right, listen, Dutch. Listen, we loved having you on. Hope you come.
Dude,
back.
Love seeing you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, we'll see you on the next one, guys.